Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This episode we have IndyCar Competition President Jay Fry. Sat down with him at the recent IndyCar Open Test at Phoenix with my racer colleague Robin Miller. Most of what we spoke about was 2018, what's coming. The new Universal bodywork that's going to replace the current aero kits done by Chevy and Honda. Those have obviously been frozen in terms of development. No tweaks, no modifications, no anything for 2017, while IndyCar works on its new spec replacement, lower downforce, sleeker, just complete shift from what we have had on the, call it the Indy Racing League philosophy for bodywork, with the overhead air intake and just something that is broken from what the kart and champ car and before that the sleek missile-like cars used to look like. So we're going to be going back to that in 2018. And that is something that Jay caught us up on in regards to development, how that's going in the wind tunnel, what their thoughts are in terms of what they want it to do for downforce production, where it's made, but also general concept on how much downforce they want it to make. So also spoke about aero screens, cockpit protection with Jay, looked at the schedule a bit, the deregulation of parts on the Dilawri DW12, areas where IndyCar is now allowing teams to develop things on their own, build some things on their own. So Robin and I had, actually we sat down for probably 45, 50 minutes, about 30-ish of it was meant for interview. So that's what we have here. We also have about 115 plus episodes of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast you can download on iTunes through your favorite podcast aggregator. We also have a new Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page where you can get every episode as well when those go live. If you can, please share it. Please like it. Spread the word. All right. Myself, Robin Miller. Off we go with Jay Fry. So, Jay, we saw at the Detroit Auto Show a suggestion of where IndyCar is going to take its aerodynamics, the looks of the cars, the appeal of the cars starting in 2018. You said these renderings aren't it. Right? This is, you're not seeing the final product, but don't be surprised if it's in this realm. I know privately IndyCar has been doing evaluations, doing, you know, simulations and trying to look at the numbers. How is that coming?
Good catch. Well, think about, as we've talked before, about having a process. So last fall, we did a couple on-track tests, one at Phoenix, one at Mid-Ohio. We did some different things to the cars with our ideas of what we thought would that we wanted to do technically to the cars, where we created more downforce at the bottom, took some of the parts and pieces off the back, that type of thing. So those tests went very well. From those tests, then we started designing the car, and we took almost the reverse engineering approach, but we had data to support it. And but we did all the stuff we wanted to talk about with the lower engine cover, and again, the rear guards, you know, what do you do with those? Do you keep them on and off, that type of thing? So we've come up with some different scenarios. So since then, we've taken all of our drawings, our data. There's been a couple scale model tunnels that have went very well, actually surprisingly well, have exceeded expectations. So far, we feel like we're on a good path.
Would you say exceeded expectations in performance, in downforce, in horsepower, and
look? More in the wind tunnel part, piece of the equation, performance, because again, we did track testing first. It showed what we wanted it to show, which was good. And then we did the when we say reverse engineered, we tried to come up with, again, we looked at cars over the last 20 years. How can we make the car look a different way? Low engine cover, sleeker, less parts, pieces. And we did that. And then you have this puzzle. So then you're hoping, if you had really good people working on this project, you know, Bill Pappas, Tino Belli, but you don't know until you run it. So again, even to this point, the numbers are very encouraging at a scale model wind tunnel. Well, then the next step is, you know, a full scale tunnel. Then the next step is track testing. So far, we're checking off all the boxes. We still have a ways to go. I've seen historically cars that perform very well in the wind tunnel and then they don't in real life, you know? So, or you see a car that looks great on paper, you build it and it's like, that doesn't like quite look like what we wanted to or whatever. So I guess the moral of the story is, so far so good. We feel like we're on a good path. We still have ways to go, but you know, it's progressing like we wanted it to.
What's your timeline for turning these wind tunnel numbers and whatnot into on track? I believe you said you want to have some sort of full scale model for show in around the month of May.
But in terms of actually getting something on track, you know, seeing not only what those numbers look like, but getting real world data, what's the general timeline for that, do you think?
End of July, first of August, hopefully, yeah, would be the first step, we hope. I mean, again, you know, sometimes you put in timelines and you're setting yourself up to fail. Yeah. But again, so far we feel like we're probably, there's things that we're behind schedule on, but there's things we're ahead of schedule on because, again, so far the wind tunnel numbers have come back encouraging. So that we're shooting for that general time frame to get a car on the track.
This is more Marshall's bailiwick, but the drivers all say the air is what we want, the air under, they don't want the downforce on top of the car, they want the dirt downforce on the bottom, they want to make it easier to draft and get next to each other. So is that the number one goal of this aero project? I mean, is that what you, because what they like about it is that you guys have been listening to
it. It's absolutely what it is. So it's to create more underwing, the downforce is generated by the underwing, not everything on the top. So again, what we did on the track testing was that, where we took stuff off, put it on the bottom to see how it would react, how they could pull up, how they could pass, that type of thing. And it went just as we expected, or what we were hoping for. So that's what's all been built into the car. So there'll be an overall, especially short oval road courses, an overall reduction in downforce too. So that's part of this too, is to get some downforce out of the car, and then the downforce that's still in the car to come from the bottom, not the top.
And what are you seeing for drag reduction as well? Because if I look at some of those renderings, you know, the sketches, some of the parts that either were off the car, from the top side in particular, it wouldn't be hard to imagine that the drag numbers have also become really nice.
Yeah. Let me think of how that went. The car in its current configuration, there was probably a little more drag to it than we anticipated. That was one of the things we talked about, having to work through it. But not bad. I think part of that is, if you look at some of the wheel guards and different things, actually took drag off. Right? They did some, no. You're right. That might not be the exact right way to. I'm numbered out on this thing. Again, you're right. You can't have this. You can't create a car that has the drag numbers become very important too.
Sure.
But really, the biggest target we've had is the overall downforce numbers. I mean, the downforce numbers are very high, and we're trying to get them back in a reasonable area. So.
Do you foresee, and if we're talking specifically road course and short oval stuff, do you foresee the drag downforce reduction being something that makes a Phoenix less of a flat out, if not almost, you know, entirely flat out in the race kind of thing? Some tracks where the excess of downforce has really just made it where the throttle's pinned the whole time and passings are?
Yeah, it would be way more likely that that's true, yes. That it's not, again, if you look at the, people talk about the old days where you would drive it in the corner and you had to lift, you know, and then you got back on the throttle, you know, that type of thing. So that's really, that's the approach that we're going on this car. Again, how far do you get on that? So if you can go flat the first 10 laps of a stint, and then you got it, you know, as the thing goes on, you start having to, you know, there's different, Texas this year was a different thing, but think about that race, how it started off, and then at 10 laps into it, it started to, you know, spread out, or it became a different passing opportunity. So that's really it. Again, you can't go back to where this thing won't have 900 horsepower and where you can do a drag race down the straightaways and then you got to, you know, slam on the brakes, lift, you know, who's the bravest one to drive it in the farthest, that type of thing. That's not what we're going for either. So there's some balance between where we're at and that. We'll be in the middle of that.
So we look at how far things have come for IndyCar on the technical side just in the past couple of years. One of the big items as well, which we spoke about in May last year and has come to reality, is, as you call it, deregulating some areas on the car so that it isn't all Velara or, you know, 100% spec. What areas have you opened up? What areas have you said, all right, teams, you can do these things? And what processes have you put in place to have them submit, ask for approval.
Right.
How's, what can they do, and how do you guys govern what you do or don't allow? No,
well, it's that actually got put together really late this year. So there's a smaller window of what they're going to be able to. There's a relatively good sized list of things that they'll be able to build this to a regulation, so they can build it on their own, but it comes to a regulated part. There's a smaller group of parts next year they can build to, you know, how they, within a window. I mean, obviously there's rules, it's not completely wide open,
sure,
within a box. So really, we're working as much of that is going into 18 too. So a lot of the stuff they'll build in 17 will be parts built to a rule, you know, and then we're still working through the whole, that whole process.
What are some of the things teams have been allowed to build on their own coming into this season?
If you look at that list, those are open to be developed. And some of the stuff was already being done. The red stuff is new.
A lot of piping, ducting.
I mean,
you know. Inner roll bars.
Yeah.
Suspension? Any suspension, Jay? Can they build their own?
Not yet.
Not yet. But what the teams have said to us, unprompted, is they like the fact that you listen and,
yeah,
and that, well, their input matters suddenly. And,
yeah,
they, and that's, you've kind of won the paddock's trust, which is not hard. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Well, again, we try. So on this, again, when we first talked in May, we put together the plan, right? So the plan ended up being the Friesen 18 universal kit, you know, 3 years, 21. So what we're going to do, this plan is going to evolve. So in 19, we're going to decide what's going on in 21, right? You're just going to keep it rolling out like that. So in 19, you could decide, is the current, what we're currently doing, the right way to go for another year, and then do something, then you go 22 through 25, a new thing, or what? So that's part of what this is too. So we've in the 5 year, in the plan, which I should show you guys, there's a bucket. So here's everything that's happened in 17. Here's everything that's happened in 18. So one of the things we did was we were able to get all this stuff back.
Mm.
That was step one, right? So now we couldn't just, we have to do it smartly. We can't just go, here, this is all deregulated, go get them, right? Because that's not smart, because teams already have inventory.
Sure.
There's ways to go about the approach. So we've had to do this deregulation piece and methodically and smartly, and we're still working through that, especially for 17, because with it being a freeze, we've had to be careful on what is frozen and not, right? Because I mean, even though it's the aero kits froze, there's other stuff that we had to, because it's part of the whole puzzle of the car. The original list was much larger, and we got to the point where it was difficult for us to police. It was difficult for the teams to execute. So let's do it methodically and smartly. And part of this plan, we're just going to keep going.
So some of the items, that the big list that was cut down to start 17, you'll probably add some more in for 18.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And like Robin mentioned, it's not, again, the suspension pieces and things like that. I mean, that was originally something. And could it be at some point? Sure. But right now it's not. And that was more listening to the teams, right? I mean, again, all this was listening to the teams. What we did, let's back up. So we sent something to the teams, and I don't know if we talked about this or not, but where we did almost a survey. If you could build whatever you want to build, what would you want?
Yep.
Right, to start from scratch, start all over. And we had them all populate this thing. So then we created this thing, and then I think there was 26 things on this list, and I think we've addressed 15 of them. So good, you know, and again, even on the ones we've addressed, there were ones that everybody said, yeah, that's easy, or not easy, but we want to do our own, perfect. And there were other ones where it was more scattered, where this team wanted to, and this team did, and this team, but we were still able, I think, to accommodate the entire group, paddock, on different things that they wanted to do or not do.
Can you protect them from themselves? I was talking to an engineer yesterday, and he said, one shock is $10,000. One damper, $10,000, and it's really an $1,800 piece. This is insane waste of money. We don't need to do that. Is that something you guys could step in and try and help?
Well, that
save
again,
these people from themselves.
How we populate the plan as we go. I mean, right now, shock, that's open. right? That's completely open. So again, is that something we need to look at in the future? I mean, possibly. Maybe you do something.
Doesn't that sound incredibly insane though, $10,000 for
it? Well, what happens
not is, in this case.
No.
You know, because that is really, in IndyCar, with the way the rules are set,
absolutely,
dampers are really truly the one, the primary area for that teams can use to differentiate themselves in terms of handling performance.
Yep.
You can change springs. Everyone has the same springs, just choosing what you have. You can. There are damper vendor options, whether you want this brand or that brand, but the internals of the shock, where all this money is spent, not so much on the pieces themselves, but the testing and R&D, that's why a Penske car through turn one at St. Pete kicks the living S out of, you know, every other car. It's not just, look, everyone has great drivers, everyone has great engineers, but why is that car a tenth and a half faster? Tends to come down to the handling, which traces back to the damper.
Right, program. And that, Martin, spot on. So that's
tech on the 10.
That's part of deregulating. My opinion has always been when you do some of this, it actually can help reduce cost and create a better product, right? Because the smaller you make the box, the more expensive it gets, right? I think, right?
So again, and so I wasn't saying 10 grand isn't crazy. I'm just saying that of the areas teams have to spend to really separate themselves, that's the one big area. Yeah. So the fact that an $1,800 shock ends up being about 10 grand with all the time and money, it's not a surprise. It's a big number, but it's not a surprise. It's a big number.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's about the, what you said. So the box is closed around it, but this box down here is like this.
Yeah, a lot bigger.
So I can't do anything here, but I can do and
yeah. Yeah. So,
or the even the small box can become, that came out kind of wrong, because a small box, it takes more money when you have a small box to try to figure something out, right? I mean, if you, the box is open and you can kind of do more things, you could fall into something easier, I guess is what I'm thinking.
Aero screens, cockpit protection. We were talking before we started here about Mikhail Aloshin's recent comments, which basically said, screw all that. You know, we're here to race.
If you want to be safe, if you want to ride a safety, stay on the couch and watch, because racing's dangerous. That's why people watch it, and that's why we do it.
Now, none of us want to lose a Justin Wilson again, Dan Weldon. None of us want to lose any driver. Since IndyCar hasn't rushed an aero screen or a halo, or hasn't rushed anything in as a result of our most recent loss, taken some, I don't want to say extra time, but you haven't made a knee-jerk reaction. Knowing that there is not something in place yet, has there been any change or evolution in mindset of this in terms of we still have to do something, but we don't know when? Or has there been any thoughts of, to Aloshin's point, maybe this is just part of who we are and we don't do something? Curious?
Safety is something that's obviously paramount to what we do, and we work very hard to make sure we put the safest products out there. So some of the things we did on the freeze, and just when from tethering pieces and doing different things, that's made it better. That's one piece. But going forward to the 18 car, there's we're working on side impact protection to have more of that. We're working on a screen or a halo type piece. I mean, we're full speed ahead. We'll have things like that ready to go. And then once we, or that's the plan, is to have it ready to go. Once we have it ready to go, then we as a group decide, is this the direction we want to go or not? So we haven't slowed down at all. And it's actually been shocking. We've gotten calls from all over the world because they hear how far along we are in some of our things that we're working on. And it's very behind the scenes, like you're saying, but we're working hard to have something that will be a possibility sooner than later.
Would that be something that was on track testing potentially with, in that hopeful late June or July, August?
I don't know if it'll be on that one, but before the end of the year, it'll be on here.
And is that something
that's the goal? When I say yes,
I understand.
We're working towards that. So we've come a long way, we think, in the material. We think we've come a long way in the application. We think we've come a long way on the mechanics of how we, you know, how you could structurally put something on the car correctly to, you know, without. So we think we've come, we're making good progress. Again, all this stuff, I agree, you always want to do stuff as quickly as you can. But once we get that all done, then how does that affect the performance of the car? Because there will be an effect, right? So, I mean, when I say performance, not that it's negative, but does it do something different? There's always a cause and effect to everything we do. So every time we do something, we have to have a process and have to be methodical about the final product.
And we've obviously spoken about the Ray reviews that you and your team have gotten from the paddock and drivers about being inclusive, asking for their input. Do you look at something like a cockpit protection piece as a mandate? We're doing it. Or do you look at that as one of those items of, we're going to put it on the car, we're going to ask all the drivers or as many drivers as possible to test it, see if they like it, and take their feedback and then decide whether to use it. It's kind of a difference between right. Here it is, deal with it, versus if you tell us there are concerns about whether this does might not work or allow you to see properly, right. Then maybe we don't go forward with it. Is that an option?
Well, I think like everything we've tried to do is, I mean, we got a lot of very smart people in this paddock. So once we get, like with the universal kit, we're going to get it to a certain point, and we're getting close to that, where they're going to have, we're going to get lots of input from them. What about this? What, you know, do we want that? Do we not want that? This piece, that, you know, that type of thing. So the same thing, we're full speed ahead with this project. So once we get it to a certain point, then we're going to get the teams involved with to see how, what the cause and effect. We can do all we can do, but then it's going to be great to have their input, you know, going forward. So I think that's, it's a polarizing subject, because there's people that think, well, this is an open cockpit IndyCar. Well, there's one application that you could put something on the car, and really, I don't even know if you're really going to notice it that much. You know what I mean? I mean, so it's not, you know, maybe that's the balance of where it does create much more protection than there is now, but it's not, it still manages to have the open cockpit feel, look, integrity. You know,
so maybe not as balance, as ungainly as some of the things we've seen maybe tested.
Yeah.
Another open wheel series.
Oh, the
the Jungle Gym.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, I understand. Even so, like that type application, we couldn't do that. Hmm. You know, for you couldn't do it at Texas. You couldn't do it at, you know, a bank track. It'd probably be difficult here because you can't. They have enough trouble seeing through it. You know, and then we're going through corners like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it even does different things. So again, that's part of the cause and effect. So again, we want to make sure we're providing all the tools that can be the safest we can be. And then at the end of the day, we'll get the teams involved. Because again, we get it to a certain point and we think we've done all the due diligence, but there's always more. And we want to make sure we get their input.
Are you still thinking of multiple versions of that cockpit protection in light of the fact that we do race on flat ovals, banked ovals?
It would be best to have one.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
If you could, a single version that worked everywhere.
Yeah, that's, we have numerous things we've worked at, looked at. We're kind of honing in on one that seems to be the best that could work wherever we go, so.
But you're open to suggestion and trying to figure out, okay, let's look at this. Look, what makes the most sense here for the race team and the race fan and the whole show?
Yes.
I mean that's,
absolutely. That's so. Again, we put out that little release a week ago, right? And in that little release, we talked about three or four things,
right?
And it wasn't that big a deal.
But it was all met.
But it was
with,
all good, right?
It was all so met with
the push the pass thing. Okay, that makes more sense.
Right.
The giving the teams the reds. Perfect. Right. Good deal. Right. That's a good thing. The stuff that we did, some of the events, you know, here. So one of the things, how, Marshall, all this stuff that we've tried to do, you try to go, how can you do it the most economically, the most common sense, the most whatever, but not change the product? You either make hopefully you can even make it better.
Of course.
Right? So that's what, so like here, you know, Saturday's going to be a big day when we come back here. There's a lot of stuff going on. That's cool, right? So how, but it's also good if we do it right. It's technically possible the teams could come in Friday morning, right? And then practice Friday night. So it creates a, you know, as a team, one of the ways you can save money is less days at the track.
Absolutely.
Right? all of us. I mean, everybody that comes here, it costs more to be here more days. So if we can condense some of the things we're doing, make it more impactful for the promoter and the fans, make it less expensive for our guys. And process. I'm wearing that word out. I'm sorry. But when we went to Texas and we went back there and we practiced for 7 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Seven. And we had the best race of the, or one of our best races of the year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? I mean, oh my
God.
Right? So you go, okay, that right there, we as a league, we figured out the procedure how to do it right. You know, I mean, the technical, the inspection, how we all run the thing, it went very smooth. Rocket did a phenomenal job. We come up with this plan, perfect. Went ahead our practices, perfect. Lined them up, that was pretty good. That was a one-day show.
Yep.
Kind of, right? I mean,
that's the next thing. Promoters are going to, they're always bitching, we got to have a day. Nobody shows up for practice. If we could go back to Milwaukee in 1964, you practice, qualify, and race on the same day, people have a whole day of entertainment. It ramps up the enthusiasm and the intensity. And
why not look at it? Because you might not be able to do that at every venue you go to, but some of them you can, and it might fit really well.
Absolutely.
So that's having, Sperber. I mean, good friend, great promoter, $178 million going, so it's going to be spectacular. So we worked on this together. So me, from a team perspective back in the day, I'm like, well, what if we did this? And he's like, what if we do that? Perfect. So, you know, Friday night, which this always drove me crazy, that when you're a team and you're practicing during the day for a night race, you know, you never practice at night. It's
exactly.
Like, this makes no sense.
Yeah.
Right? So we fixed that here. So we're going to you know, you can do one practice, qualifying stuff, whatever. The next practice, just practice and race during, because that's the race time, right? And then you come back the next day, you practice a little bit in the heat of the day, so you can come back and qualify like that.
Yep.
Good, line them up, here we go, done.
Yep.
Well, it'll be awesome. So it should make the race better, because we're practicing racing stuff.
Some of the best races I've ever seen are ones where it rains between after qualifying, essentially rains.
Yeah.
Before the race.
Yeah.
So teams have spent the weekend, whatever, perfecting the car.
Right, yeah.
Tracks change completely.
Big time.
People have to guess.
Yes.
And you have complete unpredictability.
Right.
So instead of having teams that are overly studied and you get a bit, you know, the top 10 finish in the top 10, you actually, you roll the dice. Those to me, so the more, I think the more IndyCar can do something similar to that where teams are not going into a race where they know everything.
Sure.
Fans are almost guaranteed a formulaic finish. You go, all right, I love it. Who's going to fall off?
Right.
Who's going to rise?
Or Texas this year.
Yep. I mean,
you know,
but that's the model.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, or Texas with the repave. So that, you know, we had the formula last year it turned out good. But now it's going to be a whole different one because of, you know, the repave, which is great. I mean, it's a new challenge. And new, you know. Again, it's funny coming here. You know, last year, being the first year in 10 years, there was none of our drivers who'd run on this track. They'd run on the track before, but not with the new configuration.
Sure.
Right? So coming back, it just feels like people are more comfortable here than they were a year ago. Just because of that, right? Just because we've been here now again. And I've always believed in that, too. That's another scenario, too, is when you come back the second time, it's usually a better event just because people are more comfortable.
Coming into 2017, nearly identical calendar, had the addition of Gateway. What do you look at for IndyCar's next couple of years? Close out the decade in terms of number of events and venues. I know that street races are often the easiest way to penetrate a new market. Try and get some new fans, build a fan base somewhere.
And also the most difficult. Step one was to get to the point where we're at now, where there's consistency the next couple of years, right? Where we have the 17 races, we have the calendars pretty set. You know, that part's good. And then what's, you know, geographically, what's important? Where are there holes in our current schedule? What is the total amount that we want to go to? You know, so it appears that, you know, 20 was always the bogey. You know, it's like, is that the right? Again, this is all very debatable.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to just have 20 races to have 20 races. Right, I mean, we got 17 venues now that we're really promoters that are great partners that we're really excited about. So if you added one or two, they would have to fit in the windows, you know, that are open, and it would have to be some sort of excitement to the opportunity.
I know Mark still likes the idea of doing some early in the year international stuff, but I also look to, or do you look to...
And that's different than that.
Understood, right? Understood.
So that would be another element to it, yes.
But do you look to the glaring hole, if you look geographically, Pacific Northwest, Western Canada is a place that IndyCar should look at going back to? Had a rich tradition, it's just been a while since we've been there.
Well, same as right here. I mean, again, we're reintroducing ourselves to this area. I mean, this place was built for an IndyCar race in 1964, whatever. So it was important, you know, it felt great to come back here. So there's Road America here, Watkins Glen. You look at some of those other areas that we used to go to that were important and impactful. Well, why couldn't they be again? They could, right? So sure, it would behoove us to look at that.
Last item that comes to mind, spoke with one of the senior folks from HPD earlier today and said, hey, what do you think about this season with the aero kit freeze? Do you think you guys have a better chance of winning, win some more? Last year, obviously, Chevy took 14 out of 16 races. And he was very honest, said no, flat out said no. I don't think we're going to have a chance of really improving much, winning more than we did. Pointed to the aero kit freeze, but pointed to inability to mix and match some of the various aero kit pieces they've had, basically having to work with the homologated frozen 2016 piece. I kind of understand where he's coming from, but I don't know if that's something that you would agree with or disagree with. They obviously want to win. They don't want to spend another year getting their butt kicked. Why wouldn't a Honda, for example, be able to work with some of the other aero kit pieces it's had, knowing that these are really development items? It's just, well, can we take that off and put that on to see if that helps us at all? Yeah. Was there a reason that door was closed?
No, to me it seems, and again, I can't, you know, speak for them, but from what we see, I mean, even here so far in practice, it seems to be tight, much closer. So we're comfortable and think that they have, you know, we don't think like that. I mean, I think that again, this, you think about it as a race, right? They've got good race teams. The race teams have had a year to work on this stuff, right? So that's one thing. When you have this freeze, I mean, it is frozen, but there's other things that come with it too, like you mentioned, that they should be, I would say, we think they'll be competitive, yes. And they got, I mean, again, too, I mean, they got great people. And then the thing, too, they've, you know, the Ganassi piece is something that's different. Their lineup is different. They, you know, there's, if I was them, I would think there'd be room for optimism.
And that was Jay Fry. Definitely appreciate the time that he spent with Robin and I at Phoenix. He and his team have, frankly, taken IndyCar a long way in a short amount of time, and they continue to move things from the competition side to what I believe is a more attractive package, and definitely something that I think is going to continue resonating and connecting with more people to bring IndyCar out of the shadows and more towards the forefront of motorsports in North America. Again, you can get more than 115 episodes of my little podcast. You would join our Facebook page, share it, let folks know about it, the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, where we have every episode as it goes up. Obviously, iTunes is another place you can get every episode, and through the variety of podcast aggregators, download it to whatever you want, listen to it whenever you want. Really appreciate everyone's praise and positivity and help to just get the little word out. You know, not enough of us in motor racing trying to share the things that we love with one another. There are those who do wonderful jobs of it. Midweek Motorsport, Dinner with Racers, the Motorsport Magazine podcast is a wonderful one. My friend Ryan McGee, Marty Smith, there's a lot of good folks doing good things, whether it's my own or others. Please do us a favor. If you like what you hear, share with others and get them listening, because more people sharing good things in this sport, definitely not a bad thing. All right, I'm done rambling. I got other things to do. Oh, we got a podcast coming with IndyCar CEO Mark Miles. So that one, he actually uncorks a lot of really good stuff. So look out for that in the next, I don't want to say actually, because I could say tomorrow and it could be 3 days. But nonetheless, that's coming. As always, I'm Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.